and welcome to the CWF Gamecast. As always, I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and today we have a really special episode. We're going to be talking about the week in gaming. We're going to be talking about some recent informal gatherings I've been kind of holding, an upcoming painting social at Battleground Games and Hobbies. Finally, we'll be doing a review of Bailey Records. They do music to game by. We're going to have our mailbag, an update slash reminder on our podcast contest, and a t-shirt giveaway. And for this episode, I'm really excited to say that I am joined once again by my friend, Drew. Drew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yourself, John?
Doing not too bad. It's, well, you know what it is. It's ridiculously hot around here today. This entire week, actually. I think Friday is supposed to be like, what, 100 or so?
I don't know.
That's
I don't pay attention.
The reason is because you're a vampire. So you're not awake during the day, during the hottest time of the day. You just wake up at twilight and you go out and, you know, suck your blood and hit a couple of blood banks and then you're done.
Yeah, pretty much.
Us normal people, we have to deal with the harsh glare of the sun as the nuclear explosions happen and it rotates and so forth.
Well, that's your problem, not mine.
Well, I've heard that, you know, you have a few leads going on so that you might become a normal person as well, hopefully in the not-too-distant future.
There are advantages to being a daywalker, yes.
Well, why don't we get started with our week in gaming? It's something, you know, that we do all the time on the show. So, what have you been doing in your week or weeks in gaming?
Really, I haven't done much this last week. I actually dropped from the Monday night game I was in.
Why is that?
It was messing with my sleep too much. They didn't start at a consistent time. They didn't end at a consistent time. Great people. Loved playing with them. But it just threw off my sleep schedule too much.
Well, you know all about that from our D&D game. I mean, we don't normally start at a particular time anymore. Don't tend to end at a certain time either.
Well, I mean, that was monthly. This is weekly.
True.
So it didn't really mess with my schedule too much, but this does.
Yeah, that would. That definitely would. Have you been doing any other gaming kind of stuff at all lately?
No, the only really other gaming thing I did lately was I went down to Plainville to meet up with you.
That's right. We're going to talk about that under the informal slash casual Saturday gathering kind of thing. Well, with me, I've been incredibly busy lately, as far as gaming goes, actually. So, listeners might know that I had mentioned previously that, you know, there's this big move coming up that my wife and I were going to be moving to a new condo, and that's going to be further away from where we are right now. So, I have officially dropped from our D&D game, which I hated to do, but at the same time, it's just like, it was a commute is really what did it. On a good day, it would be an hour, but we tacked traffic on, and it makes it worse. So there was no way I could, you know, really do it, even with a monthly game. It wouldn't be a problem if we did it on a weekend, because weekends, you know, it's not that big of a deal with the traffic and everything. But going on the highway after work and stuff, by the time I'd get there, it just wouldn't be worth it. Get maybe, what, an hour, maybe 2 hours of gaming in. So I was sad to let Teddy Roosevelt know that I would be dropping from the game, but I passed that message on to him, and I hear that you guys are going to be revamping how that goes, I think. Either a new system or new storyline or something, so I'm hoping that all works out, and that you guys do some cool new stuff with that.
Yeah, something's going on. I don't know what exactly, but then again, the only person who's going to know anything is Teddy Roosevelt.
That's also true. I would imagine, well, are you guys still going to be meeting this month? Because you played the last Monday of the month.
I have no clue.
I can say with all certainty that if you guys do meet, I will not be there.
But because you're lame.
Well, there's that as well. So in addition to the D&D news, I've been doing lots of painting. Those of you who, you know, follow on Twitter and who, you know, see what's going on Facebook, you'll see that I have been putting updates up and lots of things going on the blog. I've been painting, well, I painted a lot of things. I painted all of my Flames of War Panzer Grenadiers, and John Caputo actually was nice enough to, you know, take them, do all the cleaning up and removing a flash and mold lines and all that kind of stuff, and then he glued them onto their bases. So I went ahead and I painted those up, and I want to talk about painting just in general in a little more depth after we talk about the week in gaming, but I painted those, and I painted some Perry Miniatures stuff for Black Powder, which is that, you know, rule set that's come out by Warlord Games. So I'm doing an American Revolution, or as it's known internationally, AWI, American War of Independence, and I'm doing an American Militia Army. So I had painted up a 6-pounder artillery piece, which is, I don't think I paint well, but this piece happens to be something that I was particularly proud of, and I think it came out really well. It could be because, I mean, it's wood and it's metal. You can't go wrong with metallics, really, because no matter what you do with them, they tend to look good. And the wood was, I don't know, it was dry brushing. But I did that, I painted some guys, and worked on that kind of stuff. But it's been really busy with that. So I just kind of did that sort of stuff, and I'm sure there's other stuff that happened in my week in gaming, but that's all I can actually think of. But, well, the Saturday gathering, like you had said, was the, yeah, that was the only other thing I had done in my week in gaming. Coming up, though, this Thursday, which will have already gone past by the time all of you listen to this, at my work, they're running the first of two, which will hopefully be more than two, monthly board game sessions. They're going to be running it at the Hills Branch Library, and I think it's like 6:30 to 8:30, and they're going to do it again. I think it's the third Thursday in August, and it's just people get together. The place has some, you know, board games there, but you can bring your own stuff. Just kind of hang out and play some games or whatever. So I'm going to be going to that, which should be a lot of fun. A friend of mine at work is running it. Another friend of mine at work will be, you know, manning the shop, so to speak. So it'll be nice to kind of hang out. And I think they're expecting maybe 20 to 30 people to show up for this first one. And then, like I said, there's going to be a second one in August. So if any of you are around or are interested in going to something like this, you know, just send me an email at cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. And I can give you the information on this particular event or anything else we talked about on the show. I will gladly talk to you about it. But it should be a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something that would be pretty interesting to check out. I haven't heard of libraries doing that before.
Yeah, they do a video game thing after school. They do, like, Wii tournaments with, you know, Smash Brothers and Guitar Hero and a bunch of stuff. So they're trying to branch out and just kind of get into stuff, anything that people might want to get involved with. So they thought board games would be a kind of cool thing. That's how I actually played that game Blockus. They had picked it up, and I played it one day at lunch. And they have a few other games. I'm planning on bringing Cthulhu Dice, Zombie Dice, what else? Pandemic, San Juan. And I think that might be everything I'm going to bring, just in case anyone wants to play or whatever. But the group who's supposed to be coming to play, the 20 to 30 people, they're a bunch of board gamers who I think they use the website meetup.com to kind of coordinate things. So I'm expecting that they're going to have a lot of games. And I don't know if they're like Euro gamers into, you know, things like Agricola or Power Grid or like any of that kind of stuff, or Dominion or whatever, or like what type of games they play. But I will have some casual games. And I'm hoping it catches on. My friend who's been working on it, he's been working really hard. And if it takes off, you know, good showing on this one and good showing on the second one, I know they're going to continue to do these kind of events, whether they do it monthly or seasonally. I don't really know, but I want to go, one, to have fun, but also to support him and my other friend, because I'm hoping it continues. It's like you said, never really heard of places doing this kind of stuff before. So if it goes well, then they're going to keep on doing it.
Well, yeah, anything that gets more people into a library, I'm always a fan of.
Like I said, that was my week in gaming. And, well, how about we talk about that Saturday kind of gaming gathering that happened. So that was last Saturday, was the first one. And Drew, what did you think about it?
I thought it was a good time, you know, although it was just the two of us for it for a while. But I enjoyed it. It was quiet. Got to give my first try at, what was it?
War at Sea.
Axis and Allies War at Sea.
That's such a good game. When I set this up on Facebook, so if you're a friend of mine on Facebook, you would have received an invite. Unfortunately, there was no way for me to do it through the Facebook page for the podcast and the blog. But I just invited a few people to try to see who would be interested and try to see which location would work best, whether it was Abington or Plainville, because we played at Battleground Games and Hobbies. And it ended up being that Plainville was going to work best. So it was a very small handful of people who ended up showing up. Everyone else there had reenacting going on, or, you know, family obligations or whatnot. But it was a really good time. I really enjoyed playing War at Sea with you because it's been a long time since I played that, and I've never actually used the... We use the 2010 starter box. I've never really used that for, like, a demo game, introductory game, so to speak, but I know it was designed with that in mind so that you could, you know, take it to a tournament or a convention or, you know, somewhere else, a new store or whatever, and kind of use it as an icebreaker to see if people are interested in the game. What did you think about War at Sea?
I thought it was pretty interesting. Obviously, I need to play it a few more times to really get a handle on the game and everything. But I like your description of it being, you know, a beer and pretzels game. Very apt and accurate description. I got a cat crawling on me.
One of the things, I used to be pretty active on an internet message board called the Access and Allies Forum Mini. And sadly, I'm not as active on there anymore, which I really should. But anyway, one of the things that used to be talked about a lot on there, and I think this is talked about a lot on, you know, historical message boards and historical gaming groups, is balancing the historical accuracy slash, you know, simulation kind of mode of it with the accessibility of it, or like the, I would call it the beer and pretzels feel. So, like, I think War at Sea does a really good job of making it interesting and accessible to just about anyone who might be remotely interested in history or World War II or ships or any of that kind of stuff, militaria, but at the same time injecting some historical accuracy and information into it so that maybe it can serve as a gateway to try to get you to go into other avenues, other games that you might like, or, you know, like anything with a little bit more historical, you know, meat on the bone.
Yeah, a lot of these simpler, less detailed games do end up being kind of a gateway drug as a just a point of reference.
Well, I think that's an apt description because this is a collectible mini game, which I know you have an aversion to, and I think a lot of people do, because since it's collectible, you don't know what you're getting. Plus, everything is pre-painted, which, I mean, it has paint on it, is how I'm going to describe it. It may not always be painted well, may not be painted accurately, but there's paint on the stuff. So that way you can take it out and it's not just, you know, bare plastic or bare metal or whatever that you're moving around on the table. So those are good and bad, but, I mean, if you don't know what you're going to get, it's very easy for you to spend tons and tons of money buying, you know, booster after booster or case after case, trying to get that one thing you don't have. And I've been there. Early sets I spent way too much money on. I've since, you know, rolled back how much I spend on the cases and all of that kind of stuff, because it's expensive. It's like $160 maybe a case, and that's 12 boosters, something like that. So it adds up.
It does. It really does. And, you know, I play 40K, where you buy the pieces, you know what you're buying, you have to assemble them, you have to paint them, you're responsible for everything. And even then, sometimes you end up with stuff that doesn't work, so you end up buying more.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you know what you're buying.
Well, I thought it was kind of interesting. We played two games, and with the games we played, what we did, we took the 2010 starter, and game one, you were the Americans. And I was kind of insistent about that because the Americans kind of have this aura, in the game anyway, of being easier for new people to play. Kind of like how Space Marines are, you know, a little more accessible for introductory players to 40K. And I took the Japanese, so we kind of just, you know, we took what was in the starter and it had objectives in the middle, and I don't remember what map we used. We used whatever one of the map was. And we just kind of went through the turns, and the game ended pretty quickly. I think we were into, what, turn 6 or 7, and we kind of traded shots and blew aircraft up and sunk ships and so forth. But then the second game, when we swapped, it was completely one-sided in your favor, and I saw that you were catching on a lot more quickly into the turn sequence. And also, and this is a really tricky part, even for experienced players, was paying attention to the cards, what your special abilities are, and seeing, you know, unit such and such can do this, that, and the other, and when is it best to do this or whatever. Like, there's this Australian destroyer, the HMAS Nizam, I think it is, and it has an ability called Lay Smokescreen, which lets, basically, you lay a smokescreen and it gives you a cover save against incoming attacks. And you have to decide, do you want to lay the smokescreen or do you want to attack? Because you can't do both. So you kind of, like, at one point you had to kind of see, did you want to do that or not? And you chose not to. And figuring, I think you were figuring that if you attack and you suck my stuff, then there was no need for you to worry about making a cover save.
Yeah. That's pretty much what it came down to. I figured I'd be able to take you out so I wouldn't need it. I was wrong.
Well, do you know what? No, it was good you did that. I tend to play more defensively. And I'm giving secrets away here. But I tend to turtle in almost any game I play at almost any chance I have. So someone who's going to go strong on the offense is most likely going to do pretty well at me because I will just continue to turtle and concede and try to get a better defensive position and, you know, fortify that or whatnot. So if you keep on, you know, throwing the punches, then I'm going to end up going down is what it is. So that was a good move on your part. It was a good way to read how to use the ability, and also kind of a good read of me as your opponent to see, well, you know, how does he play? What's he been doing? I don't know. Did you do that on purpose, or maybe it was an accident, beginner luck or something?
That's how I play every game, if you haven't noticed. when we played Zombie Dice, I was extremely froggy. I lost the win a couple times because of that.
You did. I think you do that when we play 10,000 as well, which some people might know as the game Farkle. You just kind of... you keep on going.
I do.
Sometimes it pays off and sometimes it does not.
Well, ultimately, in a game like this, what's the actual risk? There's none, so why not go for broke?
That is a way to think about it. That's definitely a different playing style. After we played some War at Sea, we just kind of... we hung around, and then Court happened to come by, and Court, I know you're listening to the show, he brought some amazing stuff down. Lots of models that he had painted. Some 25mm Old Glory for Black Powder, because he's going to be playing Black Powder with those of us who are kind of working on our stuff. And then he had a ton of... were they 15mm, Drew? The Napoleonics?
I think he said 15. They were pretty tiny.
They were small. He had them in, like, kind of the storage thing. And he jury-rigged, like, a handle or something. But they are gorgeous. And then he had a bunch of... oh, the micro-armor. I can't remember if that's, like, 6mm or 10mm. But the GHQ micro-armor, a lot of World War II stuff. So he had all these cigar boxes. And he opened them up, and there was the army. All the tanks of Italians and the Germans and the British and the infantry. And the stuff was gorgeous. He does a really good job with that. I really enjoyed seeing all of the different things. And like GHQ, I don't think gets a lot of play anymore, but I know it was very popular back in the day, so it was kind of cool to see some of this older stuff that doesn't come out as much. And then he had a board game that you seemed really interested in, Napoleon's Triumph, I think it was.
Yeah, that looked awesome.
We have to make a time to see if he can teach us how to play that, because it looks really good.
It has to be somewhere where we can drink.
You think it's a drinking kind of game?
From the description of 2 hours for the minimum, for the short version,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to want booze for that.
Well, you know, that's not a bad playing time for a historical game and for a Napoleonic game, from what I understand. They tend to go on the longer side.
I get what you're saying, but, you know, if you're going to socialize for that long over a game, you may as well add some booze. It makes it more interesting.
It makes it tough when you're playing, though, out in a public place like a game store, you know, anything like that. That's kind of something you'd have to do at someone's house or wherever.
Yeah.
The game looked really good. I think it's put out by Simmons Games, if I recall correctly, and they do a few others. This particular one, as you can guess from the title, is about Napoleon, and it's the Battle of Austerlitz. From what I recall. And the pieces are gorgeous. The wood, the board is gigantic. Like, it's so big. I don't think you could fit it on a kitchen table, even if you had, you know, those extra leaves that you put in. I don't think it would fit there. I think you need, I don't know, some sort of gigantic cafeteria table or something for it.
That board was in two giant pieces, and it would be hard-pressed for a dining room table to handle that thing.
It's gorgeous, though. Great illustrations and everything. It had me tempted to perhaps pick up a copy of it if I end up liking how it plays, but I probably won't. But the price point isn't bad. I think it was like $50, $55, I think he said.
I thought he said it was $60, because you went to the website. I checked it out, too.
Okay, $60 then. So it's like $60 for the game, which, even that's a great deal, because when I picked up Agricola, And Agricola, great game. Love Agricola. Very detailed, beautiful pieces, wonderful board and everything. But that was like $75-$80 right there. And this looks, you know, as good, if not maybe better. So I think that's a fair price at $60 for it.
Yeah, it's $59.95. I just pulled it up.
Thank you, Drew. So $59.95 for the game? Not bad at all. And I understand we didn't have time to play it because I know you had to get going and I had to get going. And it was really nice. Actually, I want to say that Court brought his daughter down. And she comes to some of the different gaming things with him. She came with him to the 40K Mega Battle that Battleground Games and Hobbies had. And then I think he said he takes her on Thursday evenings. He lives near the Abington location. He takes her to it, and they play board games and stuff. So she picked out, I think it was like Patriots Jenga or something. And they were just, you know, they were playing it there, and I'm sure they're going to play it later on. But, like, she plays Zombie Dice and, like, all these other games out there. San Juan, and I think she plays Pandemic and a bunch of different games. And she just seems really interested in all of it. And they have a good time together. So I think it's really nice that, you know, she's going out with her dad and coming out and playing all these different games and stuff. Because you don't see a lot of younger people playing games and stuff like this at a game store.
No, most what you see from the younger kids is CCG.
You mean
not
like
that I'm biased. Yu-Gi-Oh, Magic.
Do they even still make Yu-Gi-Oh?
I don't know anymore.
I'm gonna have to ask Steve D if they still make Yu-Gi-Oh because he will recall.
Naruto was popular.
Yeah, and when they get some new one that's kind of like all of those, but I can't remember the name. I'm sure the kids will like that too.
But that Hull Breach game we saw that poster for.
Yeah.
That looks good. I don't even know what that is, but it looks good,
you
even though
game,
it says the CCG.
The game that no one at the store knew what it was, not even the people who work there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really funny. Because you went up to one of the employees, and you're like, so what's up with the CCG? And they're like, what CCG? And you're like, the one on your bulletin board. And so they came over, and they're like, I know what you know. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that's a battleground moment for you. Yeah, it could have happened at other locations.
That was just something else. It has me wondering what else gets put up on the bulletin boards, not just there, but like anywhere else that, you know, the establishments don't know what they're about. Like, if you go up to, I don't know, like a supermarket that has a community bulletin board, and like, what do people put up on there? And do they watch that? I have no idea.
I don't know. I mean, I've never bothered to check them. I don't even know if the local grocery stores have them anymore.
Hmm.
The last one I know that had one was the Hilltop in Braintree, but that got ripped down and a new car dealership's been there the past couple years.
That's true. It's a Toyota or something like that.
I'm not even going to try the name, but I know.
I can't pronounce it either.
Yeah, it's a long name, and it's got extra consonants in there, so I'm not messing with it.
No. But speaking of gaming events, we did the informal Saturday gathering, and I'm hoping that we can have another one on the 30th of this month. So if anyone's available or wants to get involved with that again, send me an email. And this one, I have a feeling, is probably going to end up being at Abington, but I'm not 100% positive. I know Plainville has nothing special going on that day, but I think for the people who might be coming, Abington might end up being closer, so... Whereas it's a weekend, I will happily make the trek to it. And that's closer to you, too, so...
It is closer to me. But what I think really killed the event we tried
Magic. This
weekend... Yeah, it was the Magic release.
Yeah, there was some big Magic event. I don't even know what it was, but there was a lot of people playing, so...
It was the release of M12.
Do you know what, though? That was my fault, because I was just like, we should play on a day that's not a weeknight. How about we try this Saturday? And I didn't even look to see what was going on. I didn't talk to anyone at the store... I wasn't like, hey, so anything big going on? So I learned my lesson this time, and I actually talked to Chase, and I was like, Chase, anything going on at either location? He's like, we're all clear at Plainville, and I think Abington's clear as well. But I wanted to make sure that, you know, we weren't going to have the same problem. So in some ways it was good that not as many people came, because not that a lot of people were invited, but if everyone had come, then I think we would have had some space issues. I mean, we had space issues already, so we definitely would have had some if more people came.
Yeah, it's pretty rough sometimes trying to get the people you need to come or find space for the people who do come.
Yeah, absolutely. And the tricky thing is, a lot of the stuff, like this Magic event, it was something officially set up by the store. There's, you know, some sort of entry fee involved. So clearly something like that has to take precedence. It's something that's being done officially by the store. It's something where they're going to hopefully make some income off of it. So, yeah, they have space there for people to use casually, just kind of come in or whatever. But they need to keep their doors open. So if they're doing, you know, an event, whether it's a Magic release or, you know, 40K tourney, whatever, that has to be given priority for whatever the space is. And then if there's space left over, if someone just kind of walks in and wants to use space, then, well, yeah. But, I mean, they got to pay the bills, too. So I totally understand it. That was my fault for not checking with anyone on that before. I was like, hey, let's play on a Saturday.
Well, look at what's happening this weekend. On Saturday, there's 42 people showing up at Plainville for a 40K tournament.
I was curious if that was still going to happen because I saw on Facebook that a lot of people were dropping from it.
No way.
And
see, I don't like that.
And also from what I saw was that so many people dropped, they ran through the entire waiting list of people who were hoping to get in, and I think they still had a few slots. So I don't know how many is a few or what. But I did see that a lot of people had dropped.
Yeah, I'm checking now. It looks like yesterday Chase sent out a request to have more people sign up because of a lot of drops, and that's not cool.
Coming up, actually, in Plainville is going to be a monthly painting social. It's the last Tuesday of the month. And it's interesting because they've been doing this for a few months in Plainville, and I went last month. But other stores kind of do something similar. Adler Hobby up in Hollis, New Hampshire, they do a bunch of these kind of things on Saturdays. I think the last Sunday of the month, or second to last Sunday of the month, is going to become like a Black Powder Sunday where people can come and hang out and play Napoleonics and play the World of Games Black Powder rules. And then the last Saturday of the month, I think, is like a Flames of War thing. And then they do like another Saturday is like this painting kind of social gathering kind of thing. So they try to do this kind of informal, just kind of meet up and hang out kind of thing on that. And then I think The Wiz on Route 9 East in Westboro on Sundays, I think, does something similar with Flames of War. So it seems like a store is kind of like this, you know, just kind of come in and, you know, get together to do some painting assembling, you know, maybe play a few games or whatever. And it seems like people like to do it. When I went to the painting social in Plainville, I was told that there weren't as many people as the time before, but they still had a decent crowd. And this coming time, my wife might even be coming with me when we go. So I'm hoping that they get a good crowd, and it should be fun. It was a lot of fun last time.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But anything that gets Plainville to start painting their armies is a good thing.
Yeah. An event like this is something that I, in the past, would not have wanted to do because I used to hate painting and assembling, so anyone who had played games with me would have seen that my armies, if they were assembled, which not always, you know, true, was that they were just hunks of plastic and hunks of metal, or, you know, sloppily had some sort of base coat or primer on. But I've since discovered that I hate assembling, but I do like to paint. So, like, I'll sit at home and paint, like, for an hour or two at night. But an event like this really helps to, when I want to get, you know, a project done, I can get, like, a whole unit or two of stuff done, can chat and kind of meet up with other people there and, you know, share tips and tricks and everything. So at the next one, I'm hoping to be able to make some major headway on my Black Powder stuff to get some more militia painted and to get, I have some, like, officers and mounted cavalry kind of people and stuff to work on all of those. And if I get some more Flames of War stuff back, maybe I can get my Flames of War army finished. So it's kind of cool to just kind of get together and, you know, just see what other people are doing. You can get some hints from everyone, and maybe you can share, you know, a tip or two with someone else. It's really cool to just kind of go. I'm amazed how enjoyable I find it.
Well, I mean, if you really need help with assembly, Cookie.
Yeah. You had mentioned that before. Thankfully, with the historicals, they tend to be all metal for a lot of the stuff, and they don't usually need any assembly, which is nice.
Yeah, that would make it easier.
I've been looking at Dystopian Wars a little bit because I like Navy stuff, for those of you who can't figure out, but I saw some videos online on YouTube, and it looks like there's some minor assembly involved, you know, some special weapons or shields I think they have or whatever, and the turrets. And as little as that is, that's enough to have me think twice about whether or not I want to get anything.
I don't think you should get any right now anyways. You're already learning two other games.
Well, that's true. I need to finish my Black Powder before anything.
Yeah, I mean, focus on one game at a time, and you'll probably be less daunted by assembly.
I don't know about that. I think I'm always going to hate assembling stuff. Maybe
I'm not saying you're going to enjoy it. I'm just going to say it's going to seem less daunting. Because when I was doing assembly on my orcs, when I was cranking out one unit, it was less daunting than when I was cranking out, you know, 15, 20 units in a day.
That's true. I've decided that I'm not buying anything until I finish stuff, so that way I don't look and see a gigantic mountain of lead that needs to be, you know, done whatever with it, because then I'll get discouraged and I'll give up and I won't do anything.
Well, if you have any spare lead, I might need some for bullets.
There is one way around it, and that is to go to a smaller scale, like 6 or 10 millimeter, because when you get that small, there's nothing to assemble.
And the painting gets actually a lot easier because there's no detail.
That's true. You just, like, brush white, and I'm done. Or you could just spray one color, and you're like, I'm done.
I mean, you don't really do the type of assembly and painting that I've done, and I know a lot of other guys have done. I've only done it once, where I bought an entire unit, assembled it, painted, and then played with it in the same day.
Yeah. No, it takes me too long for stuff.
See, you've never done it.
I feel like I'm moving pretty quickly right now, but I'm still finishing up my first, you know, regiment of militia for Black Powder. And I feel like I painted a lot of stuff, painted a lot of guys, but it's just that for Black Powder, you need more guys per regiment. So I'm doing it on the smaller side. I'm doing only 16 guys per regiment, but I think it goes up to 24 guys. So that's a few more, and I spend a lot of time doing it. It takes me a little bit longer to get stuff done. So I'm still working on that. There's no way I could, you know, get that unit painted up in a day and then be like, okay, here we go, let's play with it. And even if I could, I mean, you need more than one regiment to play Black Powder, really.
I believe it. I mean, there's an old painting tip that I found when you're doing lots of units that look the same.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is practical for what you're doing, but if you can get, like, an old popsicle stick, preferably one that's clean, not one that you've eaten clean, and just put a little tiniest drop of, like, Elmer's wood glue or some other non-super glue so that you can pop it off when you're done. And just put, like, 5 or 6 or however many you can fit on there and still be able to paint.
What I do...
That way you're not putting it down, picking it up, readjusting your sight over and over again.
I do something similar, but different. I use cork like you'd have from, you know, a bottle of something. And I put a tiny, tiny bit of super glue on it, and I glue the guy onto it, so that way I can hold the cork while I paint. And I try to do, like, all of, you know, the base coats of whatever, and do that across the entire... I'm working out of blisters, so I do a blister of 4 guys at a time. So I try to do, like, say, all 4 guys, or actually the 6 guys, I'm sorry. I try to do all 6 guys at once, and I'll do, like, all the trousers and all the shirts or whatever, and do all of that, and then I go back and then I do all my ink washes. And then after that, I go and I do, you know, all my highlighting, all my dry brushing. And I leave, like, skin for last, because skin being a lighter color, I'm afraid I'm going to mess it up if I do that before darker colors. So I try to leave that for last, and I do that separately by itself. But everything else, I kind of do, you know, everything at once to try to get it in an assembly line. And, you know, like, I line them up, and I have my... I picked up an Ott light the other day, which is fantastic. It's a great craft light, and I have that, so that way I can kind of see everything. But, I mean, even with this, I do have to pick up each one at a time, and then I put it down. But at least, you know, I have something I can hold on to so that I can more quickly go and just kind of go over everything so that my hands are not obscuring anything, and I'm not spending all this time touching up stuff because of the oil in my fingers, you know, taking the paint off.
Yeah, I know you like the Ott light. The only problem I have using different lighting is, well, I mean, it's just an appearance issue. If I'm at home and I'm painting under a yellow light, I bring it to the store, and depending on the time of day, it's either natural light or it's one of the lights in the ceiling. Natural light is white, mm-hmm. so it's going to look different. The store lighting has a... It's not halogen.
Fluorescent?
Fluorescent. That's green lighting. It's going to make it look different no matter what you do.
That's true, but under true lighting conditions, which would be, you know, natural sunlight...
Or the Ott light.
Yeah, which is trying to replicate it. You would know that this is how it's supposed to look.
I mean, it's impossible to really paint for every lighting condition.
Yeah.
So, it's an unreasonable expectation, but at the same time, it'd be nice if you could.
Be interesting. I don't know what you'd need to do that. You need some sort of scientific advance or something.
Now, the music.
Yeah, I've spent a long time I spent a long time absorbing the music that we're going to be talking about. But you spent what, a few weeks listening to it?
Yeah.
So
a couple weeks.
We've been listening to some albums from Brian Borgman, a.k.a. Stratos. He's of Bailey Records. And he does music to Game By. And all of you guys who are listening know that way back in the day, I used to do a music to Game By section on the show, and I've kind of brought it back, and with it coming back, I've been playing some Bailey Records music to try to, you know, amp you up to kind of get you used to his stuff for when we do the review. And originally, the review was going to have been done a while ago, back when Tom was still on the show, and for one reason or another, that never actually ended up getting put out, so I thought that my friend Drew would be perfect. Because, Drew, you have some musical knowledge that I think makes you especially capable for talking about this as a counterpart to me. Because, like, I know what I like, but I don't know, like, music or anything.
Yeah, I'm a classically trained musician, so...
So the albums that we're going to be talking about, there's three of them, like I said. And I have to thank Brian Borgman for sending these to me. He very generously donated them so that... could listen, and if I wanted to, we could then go ahead and do a review of them. And I actually have a few extra copies of some of them that can be used as prize support, so you might be seeing that in a prize basket for a contest or something down the road. But we got three albums. We got Autumnal Slumber, Cybernet Official Role-Playing Soundtrack, and then Warlands the Soundtrack. Before we actually get into the music, I just want to say that Brian used to work, and this is how I actually got to know him, he used to work for Mongoose Publishing, and he got the gig because they know him from doing official soundtracks for some of their RPGs. He's done work for them for that, so he ended up getting involved with them back when they did, Starship Troopers, the Miniatures game. He was on their demo team, kind of like a coordinator, and I was on the demo team back then. It was called Mongoose Infantry, so I got to know him a little bit through that, and... remembered him doing the music and thought it'd be cool to kind of just talk about it or whatever. So, Drew, where do you want to start?
Well, we can start with the Cyberpunk album. That was the first one I listened to.
Okay, so what do you think about it?
Well, this is nothing against Brian.
Yes.
I didn't like it.
Okay, why didn't you like it?
I got a really heavy jazz influence in it throughout the album that kind of increased as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a jazz fan. I've never been a jazz fan. So I'm not going to say the album's bad. I'm just going to say it's not for me.
Did you have a favorite album?
Not really. I mean, Warland sounded like it was going to be more my pace, more my style. But then it got heavier into techno.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a techno guy either, which is kind of a downfall on the Autumnal Slumber as well. I mean, I like when the guitars came in the Warland album,
mm-hmm.
because I'm a metal fan. I listen to death metal. I love death metal. And these albums, in a lot of ways, were kind of lost on me as far as what I prefer to listen to. But from a musician standpoint, from a musical technicality standpoint, they were gorgeous. Everything was layered well. It worked well with one another.
There's a lot of drum usage in this. What did you think about the drums and how they played into the different albums and the different songs?
I think the drums were well used. You know, they were loud enough when they needed to be. They faded away when they had to. There wasn't any real dissonance from the drums, which sometimes you get with this kind of music.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you said this isn't the type of music that you're into, but if you were playing a game, which I think is how you kind of have to, you know, shape this, is this something that you could see being used, like, to have in the background or to enhance your a gaming session?
As a straight background, I think it's fine. But as something where I actually sat down and focused on it, because that was my intent when I was listening to them, was to focus on them. And I did try playing them as kind of a background, but having listened to them and focusing on them before, I was able to pick up on all the things that kind of bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's great for background, especially if you like techno-type stuff, if you like jazz-influenced stuff on the Cyberpunk album. And I do like how he built kind of an Eastern feel into the Cyberpunk album.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he did a very good job of layering the sounds and the music and just making it sound like it was recorded there. You know, like it was one of the tracks, I believe, is called Bangkok Alley or something like that. And it sounds like it could be a street jam in an alley in, like, Bangkok. Which one is it? Oh, Beijing City at 10 p.m., track 3 on Cybernet.
Okay. There was one track, and I can't remember the name of it. I think it's from the Warland soundtrack. But I was listening to it earlier, when you and I were chatting earlier, and I remarked that I was surprised that I could hear a 56K modem going off somewhere, and I was like, who the heck has a 56K modem? And then it took me a moment to realize that he, you know, inserted this into the song to further enhance kind of the atmosphere of what was being portrayed in the song, and the fact that, you know, this is maybe a little backwards for the setting where it is. It's not, you know, up-to-date, technologically speaking, with what we're used to right now.
Well, the Warland soundtrack is a post-apocalyptic,
mm-hmm.
kind of a zombie apocalypse. Because, you know, he has tracks in here, Zombie Nation, The Zombies Are Taking, what was it?
Yep, The Zombies Are Taking Over.
And yep.
There's a bunch kind of like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely got a specific feel he's going for.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really, you know, I'm really interested in getting a chance to listen to his fantasy albums.
Yeah, I have to say, all of these, first of all, I'm very appreciative to Brian for sending them, but all of these are of one type of music that he does. They're all part of his, what he calls, Universe 87, which is cyberpunk, espionage, post-apocalyptic, or modern type of music. And he does a bunch of other stuff. He does things that are, you know, like superhero kind of stuff. He does, like, futuristic sci-fi. He does, like, horror or dark fantasy kind of stuff. Regular fantasy slash adventure. And then he has kind of like some miscellaneous kind of stuff that, you know, bits and pieces that go together. So these are all from that, you know, cyberpunk type of thing.
And what's funny is those other genres I think I'd like more.
Yeah, I asked him for one album in particular that I know is supposed to be fantastic called The Chronicles of Ramlar, which is part of his fantasy set. And he only has two fantasy albums. One's not out yet, and then this one. And I have to say, his cyberpunk kind of stuff is the most prolific. I think there's six total, and so we got basically half of them. Out of all the albums, Autumnal Slumber was definitely my favorite. All of them I enjoyed. I didn't think any of them were bad. They weren't
Autumnal Slumber was the one I disliked the least.
Okay. that's one way to put it. Because on that one, there were two albums, two songs that I really enjoyed. And they kind of, one's on that one, and I think one is on Cybernet, I think it is. Dark Rider Returneth is on Cybernet. And it kind of has like this whole story kind of going into it. And, you know, it's told through the song. Although it's all ambient music, so there's no words. But with the Autumnal Slumber, I felt like the entire album kind of flowed from song to song and was telling a story, kind of. It was setting a mood. And I thought it just went really well together, which is interesting because this is one of the earlier albums. This one came out in 2003, Cybernet was 2004, and then Warlands was 2009. I think Warlands probably is my least favorite out of the three.
Yeah, I mean, Autumnal Slumber has kind of, I almost want to say it's a symphonic feel where everything just kind of leads into the next song.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, very just, polished.
It keeps building. Yeah, polished is a good phrase for that. Warlands was kind of disjointed, but considering what it's supposed to be, that makes sense.
Yeah, I got the feeling that it was done that way on purpose because, I mean, if you think about it, if you're in a post-apocalyptic setting, if you're dealing with, like, a zombie attack or whatever, it should feel like you're always looking over your shoulder and, like, you're rushing around and you don't know what's around the corner. And the album, I think, gave that feel to it. And, like, the Cybernet album, I think, really had that technological aspect. It made me think of Transformers, actually, when I was listening to it. Like, you know, maybe this is what the Autobots and the Decepticons would listen to if they listen to music, which I don't know if they do or don't. But it's something I kind of felt with that. I kind of got that and hints of, you know, Star Wars prequels, I guess, a little bit with it. But, like, not in a bad way.
Yeah, I would say that the Decepticons probably listen to what I listen to. And maybe Ironhide, too.
Yeah, he is hardcore.
Yeah, he is.
So,
but, I mean, they were good albums. It's just not my style. I think if he had used, for me, if it were a little more guitar-centric,
mm-hmm.
as at least the Warland album, if it were more guitar-centric, I probably would have liked it.
Yep.
And the tracks he did use the guitar on, I view more favorably. But it's an instrument I prefer.
Now, after listening to these, do you feel like you want to listen to any of his other stuff? Because he has quite a few other albums out there.
I'd love to listen to everything he has. You know, just because someone puts out a bad album or they put out an album that you don't like doesn't mean that everything they make you're not going to like.
That's true.
And just because someone puts out an album you like doesn't mean everything they make you're going to like.
That's also true.
You know, you gotta take it one piece at a time, one album at a time, one song at a time.
I really want to listen to some of his other stuff. And as far as I know, he doesn't have many physical copies of his albums, but you can buy them on, I think that it's like CD Baby or whatever, and you can get them as digital downloads, and they're all pretty cheap, I think. I think on the higher side, they might be, I think, like $10 on the high end. And on the low end, they go down to $1, I think. Some of them are like $2. But I think they go anywhere from $1 to $10. And mid-range is like $2 or $3. I think there's some around like $5 or so. So for an album, it's not going to break your bank to go and, you know, pick up one. And,
yeah, it's definitely not a big put out as far as finance goes.
I could definitely see them being used by GMs running, you know, role-playing games or even like miniatures games or, you know, at cons or whatever, just to kind of have in the background and set the mood. I like to listen to them when I'm doing something creative. I can't normally listen to, you know, anything that I have to concentrate on, like a podcast or whatever, if I'm, you know, typing up something or, you know, writing whatever. But I could have this on in the background, and I actually listened to this when I had done a bunch of blog posts, and I felt like it helped me kind of, you know, get into the right frame of mind and hopefully create a better posting while I was listening to this. And my wife really enjoyed them. And, you know, she likes to listen to them. We'll play them sometimes in our apartment. And she'll listen to them while she's, you know, doing some work stuff or, you know, research or whatever. And she just kind of, she has it. And, like, every now and then, you know, she'll be doing whatever she's doing on the computer or wherever. And then I'll just look over and I'll see, like, her head kind of, like, grooving a little bit. Like, she's, like, just kind of really feeling the music.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something you can get into. You know, that's a very big thing with music. But as far as a background music goes, it's not obtrusive.
Now, do you feel that's a positive or a negative that, you know, you can, that it doesn't force its way into your consciousness, I guess?
I'm actually going to call it a positive because we're all gamers. We're all easily distracted. This is something that just kind of helps neutralize white noise and keep you in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously good. I mean, at our game, you see me sitting there with my MP3 player. Sometimes I get drawn into the tracks I'm listening to. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. That is true. We kind of all have our own soundtrack that we go by with it.
But part of that's where we play, right out in the front of the store. There's no stereo or anything that we can work with.
Yeah, it doesn't make it... It's not conducive to that.
And then there's also the fact that we have a vast discrepancy in who listens to what. Like, I listen to metal. Murph listens to metal. Who knows what Teddy listens to? He sent me some weird-ass links. Weird-ass links. I have no idea what Kurt listens to. Cookie's a hip-hopper.
Yeah.
You listen to girly music.
You mean Glee, which you love?
It's an entertaining show. I don't love it.
So, was there anything that you really didn't like about any of these albums or any of the songs?
It was just the jazz influence and the techno. That's it. That really is what put me off.
What's the overall Drew, you know, thoughts about it, the Drew rating for the albums that we listened to?
Out of 5, I'll give them a solid 3 because the musicianship is there, the composition is there, just all the technical aspects of it are there. For me, it's the music itself that wasn't.
Yeah, I would recommend these. I think, like you said, they are well done. These are a niche kind of piece, so they definitely fit a certain type of thing. And, you know, these are definitely, they're from the cyberpunk, post-apocalyptic type of music that his studio does. They're not, you know, from the other stuff. I really do want to see what some of the other music sounds like, because I do like this, and, you know, I would recommend it. So I'd give it, you know, 2 thumbs up, or out of your scale of 5. I'd give it, like, 4 stars, I would say. It was very well done. I enjoy listening to it. I'm actually just looking in my iTunes right now to see how many times I've listened to some of the songs, but I've listened to them a few dozen times for most of them.
Well, the big thing for me, I mean, you can take a risk on this. It's not a huge layout of cash. Like you said, it's between $1 and $10.
That's what pushes it up for me, because the value, I think, is there, since it's so affordable. With the money that you would spend for a cup of coffee, you could get an entire album of music. Even if you like half the stuff, it's money well spent.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And even if you don't like it, if you can find a way to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I've used stuff when I'm DMing that I don't particularly like, but I think it is well suited to the scene.
Yeah. Okay. So, we have a little bit, we both seem to like it, but a little bit of difference on, you know, how much we enjoyed or what we felt about it. But it sounds like we're both saying that it has some useful purposes and that for the right person and the right use that we would recommend it.
Yeah, most definitely. I have another question for you.
Yeah, go for it.
How's the renaming going?
Well, let's talk about that in a moment. I do want to talk about the contest. I just want to say that if anyone's interested in the albums we listen to or any of the other stuff by Bailey Records, you can go to Bailey Records, BaileyRecords.com, and you can go ahead and you'll be able to find the stuff there. Or if you go to CDBaby.com, you can look him up there. His name's Brian, Bryan Borgman. And he does this. He's also working on a miniatures game, Kaiju Chaos, which is going to be a monster mecha kind of game that he's doing. So he's going to have music coming out for that as well. So he's working on that, and you can find more information about that there on his website, on Twitter, and he's also on Facebook. So if anyone's interested, head on over there, and we'll have links in our show notes for all of this. But you mentioned the contest that we're doing. So we're doing a Name Our Podcast contest, and we got in a few recommendations. We got some from you, actually, which I'm just going ahead and I have to pull up what your recommendations were, because honestly, I don't remember. Do you remember what you had suggested?
I've sent quite a few, and none of them were offensive, which is an improvement.
That's true. Now, you don't have to, but do you want to share what any of yours were, or do you want to kind of keep them a secret to see if you can give yourself an edge?
I'm going to keep it a secret.
Okay. We got some submissions on the blog, so those are not a secret, and people can definitely see those, but we got... Actually, no, I'm sorry, it was on Facebook, not on the blog. We got a couple submissions from Court, and we got a few submissions from Andrew Malcolm, who's a listener of ours over in the UK, and I gotta say, the submissions are pretty good. I feel that I could potentially be confident in picking a winner from these, but I'm holding off just in case anyone else wants to get in on this. Here's how it works. you get to submit as many different names as you want for what the name of the show should be, and we are going to pick one winner, and whatever name we pick will be the new name of the show. If we pick a name that you submitted, you get to win a prize basket, and you're thinking, well, what do I get in the prize basket? Well, first of all, you're going to get a t-shirt when we get them made with the new name on it, and you will also get a one-year subscription to Battle Games Magazine, which is generously donated by Henry Hyde, editor of Battle Games Magazine. You're going to get a bunch of different downloadable kind of material from Wargame Vault and also from DriveThruRPG. So those will be coming, and I'm also going to be tossing in, I haven't decided which one I'm going to toss in, but there's going to be something special that I picked up from Free RPG Day, and I'm going to toss in one of the albums from Brian Borgman, and then on top of that, I think I might even toss in one of the TotalCon t-shirts that I have from TotalCon 2011. Those are limited in size, but the t-shirt for this show will not be, that will be whatever size. So, you know, make your submission, and the prize basket's kind of growing, but we're going to end this whenever I pick a name that I like, and till then it's going to be open, but we'll give you, you know, a little bit of a head start on how things are and let you know what's going on. So I'm happy with the submissions so far. I think they're well done, they're interesting, they're funny, and the tough part is going to be picking one.
Well, I mean, if you need anyone to help, I'm not objective.
You did do a lot of submissions last time, for the first time we ran the contest, so I'm surprised that you haven't done more submissions, because you did do quite a few this time, but not as many as I thought you would have done.
Well, most of the ones I submitted last time were just boredom at work.
That's true. The ones this time, everyone has submitted good ones. So I'm looking forward to, you know, digging through those. And I'm also looking forward to what everyone else might submit. There's still time, so send an email, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. And just give whatever the names are that you're thinking of to use. Or you can put them on the blog, or, you know, on Facebook you can post them, you know, whatever you prefer. Email probably best, unless you want to give people a heads up on what you're thinking. But those are just some options. And actually, in addition to the contest, we're doing a t-shirt giveaway, and I think this is probably my fault, but I'm kind of surprised that nobody has contacted me about this. We've been doing this for several weeks right now, and not a peep from anyone. I would have thought that someone would want a free t-shirt. I don't know if maybe I haven't been advertising it appropriately, or maybe it's because there's limited t-shirt sizes, but this one, it's a... this giveaway, it's a chance for you to win a free HuzzahCon 2011 t-shirt. These were generously donated by Dean Emerson and the MHWA, which is the Maine Historical Wargamers Association. So they gave those to me. These are the very last t-shirts that anyone can get anywhere from HuzzahCon 2011. Once these are gone, they're gone. All you have to do, if you want one of these t-shirts, or if you want it for yourself or someone else or family, a friend, or whoever, you need to email me, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. Please give me your mailing address and the t-shirt size you want. Now, like I said, there's only a limited type of sizes that you can have. We have one double XL and four larges. I know this is kind of an odd size, but these are the last t-shirts from HuzzahCon 2011 anywhere that you can get your hands on. So the first five people who email me with your mailing address and your t-shirt size will receive one of these free t-shirts. I will go ahead, I will mail it out to you. It's yours, that's all you gotta do. There's no things you gotta do, no trivia or questions to answer. You don't have to jump through any hoops, no catches, nothing. Just send me the email with your mailing address and the size, whether it's a double XL or a large, and I send it out to you. If you're curious what the t-shirt looks like, can go to the blog. We'll have a link in the show notes, but that's on the blog anyway. And there's an article on the blog titled Free HuzzahCon 2011 T-Shirt Giveaway. There's a picture of yours truly modeling the t-shirt at HuzzahCon. And then I also posted a picture of the proof, which shows both the front and the back of the t-shirt, because I'm modeling it, but you only get to see the front on me. So please send an email. I'd love to send these out, and I want to, like I say, want to give another thank you to Dean Emerson and everyone at MHWA for donating these. So I'm hoping we can get these to a good home. So send your email, and that's what we have for contests and t-shirt giveaways right now. But we will have more down the road with some more good prizes coming up. We have prizes lined up and contests working on, so we're just hoping these will be finishing up and that we can get them done and sent out.
Very nice, very nice. Now, I believe it's time for the mailbag.
Yeah, we've been doing mailbag frequently, actually, which is a surprise to me because in the older days, no one would ever write on the blog, no one would ever send an email or anything, and now we get pretty frequent comments on the blog and on Facebook and emails and stuff about, you know, things on the show or whatever. So I really enjoy hearing from all of you. I really enjoy seeing all of you. If, you know, there's an event that I'm going to be at and you're going to be at, let me know. And, you know, I want to come up and say hi and introduce myself and see how you're doing and, you know, learn a little bit about you. So in this mailbag, a lot of it kind of deals with painting. Well, I'm just pulling that up, actually, as I'm chatting. There's been a lot of comments, actually, about recent painting I've been doing. So, like I said earlier in the show, I've been painting up a bunch of, you know, AWI figures and posting them online. And there's been some good discussion on the blog about basing and color choices for models. So we had some really good feedback from Adrian and also from Henry Hyde and Court as well about different basing material that you could use on your models. Adrian's looking for something particular. He's trying to do something with magnets, I think is what he's trying to do. So it was kind of cool to see Henry Hyde and Court talk about how you can magnetize your bases and your models. And with historicals, this is really important because a lot of times you can just buy whatever models you want and whatever scale you want. And then you pick what rules you want to use them for, but each rule system tends to have a different basing requirement. So why glue your figure down to the base and have it stuck that way? Why not do something where it's more modular so that, you know, rule system A, you can use it and you can do it this way, and if you're going to play rule system B, you just swap it around. So I like the idea of magnets for that. It's not something I'm going to use, but it's really cool. Court also mentioned that you could use PVA glue, white glue, and just put a little underneath your model and glue it onto whatever base, whether it's, you know, a cereal box or if you're using like a GW base or whatever you're using, plastic hide or something. And then, you know, it just pops right off and you can re-white glue it onto something else. So there was some really good advice about that. And then there was some talk when I was doing the artillery piece, my cannon, about what color to and how to paint it, basically. So Henry Hyde gave some really good suggestions about going to Giles Allison's blog, which is Tarleton's Quarter. And Giles is a fantastic painter. Anyone who has picked up the Black Powder rulebook has seen his models in there. They're gorgeous. So he was actually an inspiration for me for what to do. But then on top of that, there were a few other places that I had looked online that were also inspirations. So it was kind of cool to be able to go ahead and chat about it all on the blog and just kind of get, you know, tips and tricks on where to go and what to look for. So I kind of use an amalgamation of everything with what I was doing, and it was kind of neat to see what other people do for techniques for painting stuff and, you know, like what kind of wash you use and everything. So like it was decided when I did my model, I used GW paints, so I used like a certain combination of I think it was gold, different golds I used, and I was but out black, I think, ink wash that I used on it. So there was that. So we talked a little bit about that. But then more recently, I got an email, and I have to apologize in advance to the person who sent this because I am going to butcher your first name. There's no way around it. It's how it's going to be. So I believe your name is Angus, if I'm pronouncing it correctly. There's extra vowels in there that I'm not quite sure. But Angus, I want to say thank you so much for sending your email. And the reason is Angus has sent this email and said that, you know, he was listening to the show and heard me talk about BG Plainville. And he was like, oh, that's close to where he works at. So he's a historical war gamer, and he's gone in there a few times, but he never saw anyone playing anything historical. I'm guessing you saw a bunch of 40K, maybe some, you know, War Machine or something like that, lots of magic. And I guess you figured no one played historicals down there. Little did you know that we do. So you found out because of the show, and Angus was asking if he could meet up with me sometime, and the guys at GameWeb, and just kind of hang out and, you know, do some sort of historical gaming maybe during a weeknight. And I had a chuckle when I read his email, because originally I heard from Cord, and he had a similar kind of situation with BG in Abington. He would come, and he came for a while, and he was looking for people to play historicals. It turned out we were coming on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and he came on a different night. So he just didn't know we were there. And now with Angus, so it's kind of cool that, you know, we talk about all sorts of different things here on the podcast and also on the blog, but that, you know, this is a way, it's bringing people together that, you know, you might not know what the person in the cubicle next to you, the person, you know, pumping gas, if they're into something you're into, and, you know, maybe they hang out someplace near where you do and you just never noticed, or you came on a different day or they came on a different day or whatever. So I just think it's really cool that, you know, this is a medium that's allowing people to kind of connect and talk about stuff together and, you know, make the world a little bit smaller.
I think it's kind of funny to hear that there's other people with court syndrome, knowing where to go, just not knowing when to be there.
I feel bad. I wish it was possible for all of us to, you know, make it convenient for everyone to be at, you know, whatever location, whatever store, whatever time or day, whatever. And it's tough, but picking, you know, the time to go that's most convenient for most people is what has to get done. So, sadly, I'm sure there's always going to be someone who's going to be walking into a store looking for a game of something and not seeing someone there. But if they had came in, you know, 20 minutes earlier or a day later or whatever, that they could find it. And I think people who play GW games in particular are so incredibly lucky, and they don't realize how lucky they are, that they can go to just about any sort of gaming place, just about anywhere in the world. And if they bring their, you know, their 40K, their fantasy, Lord of the Rings or whatever, that they're going to be able to get a game in. Whereas with a lot of historicals, that's not true. You could be playing the most popular historical game, whatever that happens to be at the time. You could have all the stuff for it, whatever. And you could go to a place that is geared toward historical gaming, and there's still no guarantee that there's going to be someone there to play what you want to play.
It is rough, but one of the big faults with historical wargaming that I've noticed is, like you mentioned with the first thing from the mailbag, there's so many rule sets.
Yeah, it's tricky. When I first got my Black Powder, I kind of freaked out because I opened it up and, you know, I read through and I was like, this sounds interesting. It sounds like fun. Then I was like, but what do I do? Because there's no points in there. There's no army lists. I had no idea, like, where do I get my models from? And so are there Black Powder models for this game? Because that's like the whole GW, I call it the GW metric, that you're used to having this, you know, closed loop of rule book and models that go hand in hand, and everything you need is made by that one company and all put together and neatly packaged and pretty with color pictures and stuff and nicely displayed, and, you know, you just know what it looks like and know where to go because they have the branding and everything. But not every place has that. I mean, yeah, Private Day Press is kind of doing it with War Machine and Hordes and stuff, but, like, even other games, like popular ones, it's not as much. Like, Flames of War is kind of doing it a little bit more, but, like, you look at something like Dystopian Wars or, like, any of the other ones, they don't have everything you need. You still have to kind of be like, I get this piece here, I get that piece there, and you have to piece it together. But it was really hard for me to get a grip on that and just kind of figure out, okay, so I need to go over here, and I want this manufacturer's models to use, and I'm using this rules, but then I want these bases, and I need to get this type of paint, and in some ways there's a lot of freedom in that, but it can be very confusing.
I mean, it's nice to have the freedom, it's nice to have the options, but at the end of the day, unless someone else is making the same rules and model scale choices you are, there's no way you're going to get a game. And that is the strength in GW. There's standardization. You know what to expect. You know when to call someone out for using the wrong edition.
Yeah, with GW, there's no there's no need to have an effort on your part to decide what you're going to do. You just know, okay, I'm going to play Warhammer Fantasy, and no matter what I pick with this, it's okay. But with other games, whether they're historical or whatever, like, you need to kind of talk to who you're going to be playing with and say, okay, so what do we want to do? And, like, this is what I had, the same conversation I had to have with the people that I played with at Battleground with Black Powder. Okay, Black Powder sounds cool. Who wants to play? Oh, I do. Okay, what era do we want to play? So we had to figure out, and then we ended up figuring out we were going to do American War of Independence. What scale are we going to do? Okay, well, we can do 20, we can do 25mm, we can do 28. Let's do 28. I like the Perrys, too. Okay, we'll do 28mm. So, like, we had to narrow all that down, and then we had to be like, so who's going to play what side? Because, I mean, you don't want everyone playing the British or whatever, because then how are you going to fight against each other? It gets boring. So, like, someone was like, oh, I'll play the British, and someone else was like, I'll do Hessians, and I'll do Americans, and there was a lot of planning in there, and a lot of effort. Not a lot, but, like, there was effort involved. Like, you had to plot it out and be like, okay, I'm responsible for this, so I will do this, and you're responsible for that, and, you know, each piece had to fit together like a puzzle, and when it fits together, it's perfect, it's beautiful, but you have to make sure it will fit together so that not everyone's doing the corner pieces and there's nobody doing the middle.
Right, but then you run into the issue of, yeah, you can now play with pretty much anyone at BG Abington, but let's just say Plainville decide to use a different scale. Or they decide to use a slightly different rule set. Now you can't play with anyone from Plainville. And you brought your stuff down to Plainville with you.
What I've kind of learned is two things. Historical gamers they used to having to collect armies for opposite sides. So they're going to have stuff. If you're playing World War II, you're going to have the Germans and you're going to have the British. So you have that so that you will play with one and whoever you're going to play against plays with the other. So that way it negates that, well, I don't know what to do or whatever. And if someone else has stuff, then that's great. But if not, you know, here's an army or here's a navy or whatever. You can use this and we'll get our game in. So I think that kind of helps with that. And then the other thing is with different rule sets, like, you don't need new models for it. I mean, unless, you know, you're doing rules that are clearly for skirmishing, and the ones you did before were clearly for large battles or whatever. Then, I mean, you got to think about it. But by and large, if you're doing the same type of gaming, and you're just doing a different set of rules, you just need to alter how the models are based, so that maybe it's a different number or a different size base. But otherwise, that's it. So you don't need to be like, I got to go buy a whole new army. Whereas with 40K, I'm just going to pick on, when a new edition of 40K comes out, which is basically a new rule set, you have to buy new stuff in order to play. You can't play with what you had before. But with a lot of historical games, game rule set A, you can always play that rule set with what you have. And then if you're going to play rule set B with a few modifications, you can play for that, but you don't have to buy anything different. You don't have to basically change what you already have in order to make use of it. Which I think that's a strength with it. But at the same time, like, it's tricky. I think a lot of historical gamers have been burnt by working with a buddy or whatever and say, I really like the Dark Ages. Okay, I'll be the Vikings, and you be the Romans or whatever. And then someone decides, well, they don't want to be the Vikings anymore. They don't want to do it in 6mm. They want to do it in 10mm, and you're like, well, I don't like 10mm. So then it breaks apart. So there is that problem.
Right, and like I said, that's the strength GW is it's standardized. Because, let's say you and I were playing fantasy, I decided to play, surprise of all surprises, orcs.
Mm-hmm.
And you decided to play Bretonians. And I buy one box of orcs, decide I really don't want to do orcs again, and then start buying my own Bretonians. There's nothing wrong with putting two Bretonian forces against each other.
It looks a little weird, but you could do it.
Exactly. You know, there's nothing against it in the game rules. There's nothing against it, really, at all. And that's where, again, that's another strength, because when you start getting into the historical war games, you're not going to be putting certain sides against each other. You're not going to put an American force against an American force for a revolutionary army.
by and large, probably not. I mean,
unless you're talking, you know, loyalist versus, but we just call them British anyways.
Yeah, there's conditions you could do that, but you're right, by and large, you wouldn't do something like that for a historical game. Of course, with a lot of historical games, you'd have a scenario set up in advance. You can't really do a pickup game for most of them, by and large. So you'd
it's another shortcoming of them, unfortunately.
You'd have, like, a setting set up, and people would know what they would have to bring. So, I mean, again, it comes to that planning and effort kind of requirement, which it's just it's for a different type of people. If it's that type of thing that you like to do as a gamer, then you're going to gravitate towards that, and if you prefer something different, you're going to do something different.
Yeah, it's just there's too many variables in getting the historical gaming to work right, whereas GW stuff, it's simple. It's designed to be simple. It's designed to pick up and go.
They have to make it easier, because that way
they make money. I mean,
that's true.
There's no two ways about it. If they make it too difficult to get into, no one's going to want to play.
That is very true.
And, again, that's a shortcoming on behalf of the historical wargaming. Not to rag on them, but it's just the way that they've decided, or the historical wargaming community decided to build their games.
It's a different way to play. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it feels like this perhaps more historical wargamers, or more wargamers, than there are gamers, people who play like 40K and fantasy and that kind of stuff. I don't know if that's true, but it feels like this more. Maybe there's not. But that'd be interesting to find out for a future show.
It would be, yeah. But I hate to end early, but I gotta get going.
I thank you for coming on. I'm really glad we got to do the review and talk about all sorts of different gaming things. I look forward to us chatting again. I know coming up in the coming weeks, we're going to be interviewing Derek Lloyd of Battleground Games and Hobbies, along with Chase Laquadara, and that should be good.
And after that, we'll start our new show, No Badger, No Gnome.
Yep, that'll be coming into this feed. So for all of you who are interested in that will be coming in, and you'll be able to get it automatically if you subscribe to this show. And if you don't want that, you can just continue to download this show, or if you like the other show, whatever. I mean, you can do any combination of it. It's kind of like what Neil Shook has been doing with Meeples and Miniatures. He has Meeples and Miniatures, and until recently, View from the Veranda was in there, but he still has Incoming 2.0 as part of that as well. So you kind of get a little bit of everything that he does all in one feed without having to track down new stuff that's coming up. So it's nice. It makes that a little more convenient. So I'm looking forward to that. And thank you again, Drew, for coming on the show.
All right. I'll see you around. See you on the 30th.
Have a good evening.
Have a good night.
Warning. Warning. Coming up next is the Music to Game By segment in the CWF Gamecast. Please stay tuned. We'll be back after this song.
Wearing some kind of futuristic armor. Pass me the can opener so I can try to get it out. No, no, Major. That is an iPad. Good Lord, man, don't be daft. It'll never fit under me monocle. No, Major. The iPad is just another device you can use to read Battle Games magazine, because it's available in digital form as well as on paper. Digital? What's that? A magazine with fingers? Well, there's still too much newfangled stuff in here. All these tanks and Blitzkrieg Commander and plastic now. They seem to be condoning the replacement of good old-fashioned lead. This is outrageous. Yes, but there's still plenty of good old-school content as well, like command challenges and even a smattering of Spencer Smith's, what? Yes, true, and those maps are first-rate. And I've read some excellent book reviews, and articles comparing rule sets, and how to make things, and interviews with some jolly interesting chaps. Well, I've got to admit, I've been converted, so get me a pigeon, I need to place an order. Converted? Excellent, Major. Committed, more like. Come and visit the website at www.battlegames.co.uk, where you can find the magazine on paper for instant digital download or even on CD, so you can simply choose whatever suits you best. You could be downloading and reading your very first issue of Battle Games in just a matter of minutes, so why not give it a try? Battle Games, the spirit of wargaming.
The CWF Gamecast is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com. And contest sponsor, Battle Games Magazine, the spirit of wargaming, available at fine hobby shops throughout the United Kingdom and beyond. Subscribe online at www.battlegames.co.uk. This recording is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for the CWF Gamecast online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter and Facebook. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.